Chapter 14. On Monday, June 22nd, all but 8 of the 100 jurors arrived for the trial of Danny Padgett. As we soon found out, 4 were dead and 4 had simply vanished. For the most part, the rest looked very anxious. Baggy said that usually jurors have no idea what kind of case they might be selected to decide when they arrive. Not so with the Padgett trial. Every breathing soul in Ford County knew that the big day had finally come. Few things draw a crowd in a small town like a good murder trial, and the courtroom was full long before 9 a.m. The prospective jurors filled one side, spectators the other. The old balcony practically sagged above us. The walls were lined with people. As a show of strength, Sheriff Coley had every available uniformed body milling around looking important, doing nothing productive. What a perfect time to pull a bank heist, I thought. Baggy and I were in the front row. He had convinced the circuit court clerk that we were entitled to press credentials, thus special seating. Next to me was a reporter from the newspaper in Tupelo, a pleasant gentleman who reeked of cheap pipe tobacco. I filled him in on the details of the murder, off the record. He seemed impressed with my knowledge. The Padgetts were there in full force. They sat in chairs pulled close to the defense table and huddled around Danny and Lucien Wilbanks, like the den of thieves they really were. They were arrogant and sinister, and I couldn't help but hate every one of them. I didn't know them by name, few people did. But as I watched them, I wondered which one had been the incompetent arsonist who had sneaked into our printing room with gallons of gasoline. I had my pistol in my briefcase. I'm sure they had theirs close by. A false move here or there, and an old-fashioned gunfight would erupt. Throw in Sheriff Coley and his poorly trained but trigger-happy boys, and half the town would get wiped out. I caught a few stares from the Padgetts, but they were much more worried about the jurors than me. They watched them closely as they filed into the courtroom and took their instructions from the clerk. The Padgetts and their lawyers looked at lists that they had found somewhere. They compared notes. Danny was nicely but casually dressed in a white long-sleeved shirt and a pair of starched khakis. As instructed by Wilbanks, he was smiling a lot, as if he were really a nice kid whose innocence was about to be revealed. Across the aisle, Ernie Gaddis and his smaller crew were likewise observing the prospective jurors. Gaddis had 2 assistants, one a paralegal and one a part-time prosecutor named Hank Hooten. The paralegal carried the files and briefcases. Hooten seemed to do little but just be there so Ernie would have someone to confer with. Baggy leaned over as if it was time to whisper. "That guy there, brown suit," he said, nodding at Hooten. "He was screwing Rhoda Casalow." I was shocked, and my face showed it. I jerked to the right and looked at Baggy. He nodded smugly and said what he always said when he had the scoop on something really nasty. "That's what I'm telling you," he whispered. This meant that he had no doubts. Baggy was often wrong, but never in doubt. Hooten appeared to be about 40, with prematurely gray hair, nicely dressed, somewhat handsome. "Where's he from?" I whispered. The courtroom was noisy as we waited for Judge Lupus. "Here. He does some real estate law, low-pressure stuff. A real jerk. Been divorced a couple of times. Always on the prowl." "Does Gaddis know his assistant was seeing the victim?" "Hell no. Ernie would pull him from the case."
"You think Wilbanks knows?"
"Nobody knows," Baggy said with even greater smugness. It was as if he had personally caught them in bed, then kept it to himself until that very moment in the courtroom. I wasn't sure I believed him. Miss Callie arrived a few minutes before 9. Esau escorted her into the courtroom, then had to leave when he couldn't find a seat. She checked in with the clerk and was placed in the 3rd row. She was given a questionnaire to fill out. She looked around for me, but there were too many people between us. I counted 4 other blacks in the pool. A bailiff bellowed for us to rise, and it sounded like a stampede. Judge Lupus told us to sit, and the floor shook. He went straight to work and appeared to be in good spirits. He had a courtroom full of voters, and he was up for re-election in 2 years, though he had never had an opponent. 6 jurors were excused because they were over the age of 65. 5 were excused for medical reasons. The morning began to drag. I couldn't take my eyes off Hank Hooten. He certainly had the look of a ladies' man. When the preliminary questions were over, the panel was down to 79 duly qualified jurors. Miss Callie was now in the second row, not a good sign if she wanted to avoid jury service. Judge Lupus yielded the floor to Ernie Gaddis, who introduced himself to the panel again and explained in great length that he was there on behalf of the state of Mississippi, the taxpayers, the citizens who had elected him to prosecute those who commit crimes. He was the people's lawyer. He was there to prosecute Mr. Danny Padgett, who had been indicted by a grand jury made up of their fellow citizens for the rape and murder of Rhoda Castlelaw. He asked if it was possible that anyone had not heard something about the murder. Not a single hand went up. Ernie had been talking to juries for 30 years. He was friendly and smooth and gave the impression that you could discuss almost anything with him, even in open court. He moved slowly into the area of intimidation. Has anyone outside your family contacted you about this case? A stranger? Has a friend tried to influence your opinion? Your summons was mailed to you. The jury list is locked under seal. No one is supposed to know that you're a potential juror. Has anyone mentioned it to you? Anyone threatened you? Anyone offered you anything? The courtroom was very quiet as Ernie led them through these questions. No one raised a hand. None was expected. But Ernie was successful in conveying the message that these people, the Padgetts, had been moving through the shadows of Ford County. He hung an even darker cloud above them, and he left the impression that he, as the district attorney and the people's lawyer, knew the truth. He began his finish with a question that cut through the air like a rifle shot. Do all you folks understand that jury tampering is a crime? They seemed to understand. And that I, as the prosecutor, will pursue, indict, bring to trial, and do my utmost to convict any person involved with jury tampering. Do you understand this? When Ernie finished, we all felt as though we'd been tampered with. Anyone who'd talked about the case, which of course was every person in the county, seemed in danger of being indicted by Ernie and hounded to the grave. He's effective, whispered the reporter from Tupelo.